Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Krimery. Each year, Juno divvies up millions of dollars collected from cruise passengers for projects that support the local tourism industry. This year, one proposed project would set aside money to help the city's tourism businesses cut down on polluting fossil fuel in their planes, buses, and boats. KTOO's Anna Canny has the story.
The proposal would set aside $1 million collected via marine passenger fees to fund a new clean energy loan program. City tourism manager Alex Pierce says the visitor industry generates a lot of Juno's greenhouse gas emissions. She said she's heard from residents and business owners who hope to cut down on pollution, but there needs to be incentives to speed the transition to cleaner power.
What I keep hearing consistently is that operators are interested and that it's just cost prohibitive.
Public businesses or governments are often eligible for money that helps them to cut down on their emissions. Juno, for instance, received funding from the Federal Transportation Administration to buy their electric buses. But private tourism businesses are often excluded from those grant programs. Bob Jans, owner of the whale watching and hiking company Gassineau Guiding, has 30 diesel buses he'd like to replace. But he says it's hard for small companies to scale up.
We can dabble here and there in the market, but until we really go into it full speed ahead, the impact is not much. Well, full speed ahead is a lot of money, but this grant program would hopefully make that possible for us.
Pierce says there's a precedent for a loan program like this. In the early 2000s, the city established a loan fund that helped companies to buy quieter engines for their float planes. The new clean energy program uses that as a model. At this stage, what qualifies as clean energy is unclear. Bottom line, it's something that will cut down on greenhouse gas emissions. Pierce says that could extend to things like hydropower or even things like biodiesel. She points to Holland America in Juno. Last summer, they started using fuel developed from cooking oil to supplement the diesel that powers some of their buses. They claim that it can cut emissions by 10%.
I don't want to unnecessarily limit operators, you know, maybe a smaller operator that wants to replace like a dirty old school bus with just a brand new clean diesel bus. That's a really big move in terms of emissions reduction.
But Jans hopes the program will eventually push the local tourism industry towards net zero emissions through electrification, which would tap into the city's hydropower supply.
If I live long enough to see our fleet converted to electric, both on our boats and with our buses, I will be the happiest person in the world.
The city is also considering a move towards further electrification of cruise ship docks. $5 million for shore power is up for consideration in the marine passenger fee budget. Though both proposals are in their preliminary stages, they'll be up for debate as the city budget discussions begin this weekend. In Juno, I'm Anna Canny.
And for many high school students, junior year is a whirlwind of academics, extracurriculars, and test prep. One group of students in Sitka has added something else to their load, a class on how to navigate the Federal Subsistence Board process. KCAW's Meredith Reddick has more.
Five regional directors, what are the land management agencies?
In a conference room at University of Alaska Southeast in Sitka, Mount Edgecombe High School students Elizabeth Griggs and Naomi Jones are eating strips of smoked salmon and talking about what subsistence means to them. Jones, who grew up in the village of Tyonik on the Kenai Peninsula, harvests moose and salmon with her family.
But it's a good snack to have as a family or as a meal, and it helps bring up the stories of when my papa was little and how he shares those with us and makes it all fun and just makes me happy.
Griggs considers the smoked salmon in her hand as she talks about her experience in the western village of Kaliganik.
I feel like it's great because it just reminds you of home and it kind of grounds you where you are. Like you could be feeling some sort of way or like anxious or homesick and you just want to go home, and then just having that little pick-me-up because of how much it reminds you of home and your family and just your way of life, because that's what it is. It's how you live your life.
Jones and Griggs aren't sharing this information just for fun. They're preparing testimony to share with the Federal Subsistence Board when they meet next week in Anchorage. They're part of a class offered by the U.S. Forest Service and Sitka Conservation Society that prepares high school students to navigate the board process.
This is the Federal Subsistence Board, and Ashley just helped us go over that. So can
Can you remember who sits on the Federal Subsistence Board?
Heather Bauscher is the Fisheries Community Engagement Specialist for Sitka Conservation Society and Salmon State. Bauscher has been teaching this class for 7 years now, and she says the goal is to make students more comfortable with a challenging and bureaucratic process. The Federal Subsistence Board oversees subsistence harvest of fish and wildlife on federal lands and waters. They're also tasked with assigning rural designation, a designation Ketchikan is currently seeking.
Many people in this community and other communities know that engaging in these processes can be really difficult and can feel very overwhelming at first.
It's a process that can be especially difficult for rural Alaskans and elders who may have limited connectivity or ability to travel. Bauscher and her co-instructor, Forest Service fish biologist Ashley Bulwark, are helping students to break down the process into bite-sized pieces. Today, they tackle the structure of the board and the regional advisory councils. Later this week, they're meeting virtually with board chair Tony Christensen. And next week, the students head to Anchorage.
So I think it's really important to provide experiential learning opportunities to go into these spaces and learn how to navigate this, because I don't think there's a way to learn it through books. Like, you have to show up in these spaces and you have to practice going through it and being there.
In Anchorage, students will attend the 3.5-day meeting and testify in front of the board using the material they've practiced. They'll meet members of the board, follow proposals, and learn how to network. Griggs says she's nervous but excited to testify.
Pretty anxious about it, but I think it would be a good opportunity for me to be able to talk about this and advocate for this and show that youth are getting involved and youth do care. So I'm nervous, but for the most part, I'm pretty excited and excited to learn more about how I can use my voice to really advocate for the things I believe in.
The Federal Subsistence Board meets April 2 through 5 in Anchorage. In Sitka, I'm Meredith Reddick.
Democrats in the U.S. House almost always vote in line with party leaders, but Congresswoman Mary Peltola's voting record suggests she's one of the chamber's least loyal Democrats. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin has more.
Peltola has bucked the party on 78 votes since the start of 2023. That's a votes against party rate of more than 12%, the fourth highest among House Democrats, according to data gathered by ProPublica. The average House Democrat votes against the party at less than half that rate. Her aisle-crossing votes are mostly in the areas of energy development and immigration. They bolster her image as a moderate who is open to working with Republicans, but they haven't helped the GOP enact new statutes. Many of the measures she voted for were designed for a different purpose, to scold President Biden. Peltola was one of just four Democrats to vote against a harshly worded but non-binding resolution entitled Denouncing the Harmful Anti-American Energy Policies of the Biden Administration and for Other Purposes. She also voted for a resolution expressing the sense of Congress that a carbon tax would be detrimental to the U.S. economy. And she voted for a bill to prohibit the administration from banning fracking, which has almost no chance of passing the Senate.
If we want to be cynical in our analysis, we could say that she feels safe electorally in Alaska to take these positions.
Forrest Neighbors, chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Alaska Anchorage, says Peltola seems to be shifting to the right on issues like oil production that are popular in Alaska.
She's probably feeling like she can afford to take these positions, even if it alienates some members of her party nationally.
Well, what about back home? I mean, does she risk, you know, alienating those on the left who support her?
Yes, but how big are they as a share of her Alaska constituency?
That's Neighbor's cynical take that Peltola is voting strategically to win an election. It's not his only theory.
It may be the case that all these positions she's taking are mainly influenced by her own conscience. That just might be her nature, to be independent in this way.
Meanwhile, the National Republican Congressional Committee, dedicated to defeating House Democrats, gives Peltola no credit for bipartisanship. They call her an extreme Democrat who has lockstep loyalty to Joe Biden. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
This is KTOO.